Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to today's event on the House, Improving the Affordability and Supply of WA Homes. For those who don't know me, my name is Adam Kinest. I'm the Associate Director for Membership at CEDA, and it is my pleasure to be here today to welcome you all to what is a vital conversation for the future of many Western Australians. Look, as a person who grew up in a poor family, I know what it's like firsthand to experience homelessness due to a lack of affordable and social housing. And my story growing up is one that is becoming the norm rather than the exception. So I look forward to hearing what actions are being taken to support more Western Australian families today, and more importantly, for decades to come. I'd like to respectfully acknowledge the traditional custodians on the land in which we meet today, the Whadjuk people of the Noongar Nation, and pay my respects to their elders past, present and emerging. I'd like to take this opportunity to thank our sponsors today, Development WA. Without the support of our members, we wouldn't be able to hold these discussions or these events. I'd like to acknowledge the dignitaries who are in the room today, the Honourable John Kerry, MLA, Minister for Housing, Land, Homelessness, Local Government, the Honourable Dr. Bradley Pettit, MLC, Member for South Metropolitan Region, and John Paulson, former President of CEDA's WA State Advisory Council. This is an excellent opportunity to also thank the other member organisations who are hosting corporate tables today, so you should see their logos there up on the screen. Thank you for your support and your ongoing support for these events and discussions. We have media in the room today. I'd like to thank them for attending and engaging with CEDA. These events and discussions take a team to happen. So with that, I'd like the CEDA team to stand. Thanks. They love this. So we have Julia Tolge, where are we? There, back of the room, Program Manager, CEDA Learning. We have Gillian Duncan, wherever she may be, back of the room, there we go, Events Executive Extraordinaire, who makes all this happen. And then we have Cassandra Windsor, Senior Economist, who will be facilitating the panel discussion today, so you'll be hearing from her. I've got a few more bits of housekeeping, and then I promise I will hand it over to the other speakers. You're not here to listen to me today. We encourage you all to be part of the conversation. So you can do that by jumping on Twitter and following CEDA using the @CEDA_news and using the hashtag WA Housing. Now, we also have a fancy little app called Pigeonhole, which you can also submit questions to the panel and be a part of the conversation. So to get to that, you just head to ceda.pigeonhole.at in your browser, and the password for today's discussion is WA Housing, all in capitals. Lastly, if I could ask everyone to turn their phones off. I believe it's a gold coin donation, normally to the Royal Flying Doctors, but our state president isn't here. But there is a lot of worthy charities, and I'm sure there'll be a line at the door ready to collect your gold coin. And in case of emergency, please follow the direction of venue and CEDA staff. I'd like to now invite Frank Mara, Chief Executive of Development WA, to the stage. Thank you.
Good afternoon, everyone, and thank you for that introduction, Adam. It's great to be here today representing Development WA at this important luncheon where we're going to be discussing housing affordability and housing supply. I too would also like to acknowledge that we meet on the lands of the traditional owners today and pay our respects to the Whadjuk people of the Noongar Nation and pay, as I said, our respects to their elders past and present. Development WA is really honoured to be supporting today's event. We play a significant role in the supply of land and infrastructure across this state, including for affordable and social housing. In the past financial year, we sold 84% of our residential land and 97% of our regional residential land, so the first one was for metropolitan Perth, at an affordable price point. We're really proud to be part of the government's efforts in boosting the supply of social and affordable housing, and we're working closely with other government agencies, as well as the building and the property industry, to support the supply of future housing for our local communities. On that note, it's my great pleasure to invite the Minister for Development WA, the Minister for Housing, Lands, Homelessness and Local Government, the Honourable John Carey, to tell us more about this important issue. Thank you, Minister.
Thanks, Frank, and thank you for the invitation to speak today. I would also like to acknowledge the traditional owners and pay respects to elders past, present and emerging. I'd also like to acknowledge my parliamentary colleague, the Honourable Brad Pettit. Where are you, Brad? Thank you. Look, I think it's stating the obvious, but we are living in extraordinary times, and the COVID pandemic has really had a profound impact on so many parts of our lives, on how we interact and engage, how we do work, and even how we do our own decision making. And of course, tomorrow we have the final, I'd say, major restrictions are being lifted. So we're almost back to a new normal. But I do want us to go back to the beginning of the pandemic. And think about what was predicted at the time. There were very dire predictions, particularly about the state of our economy, and some experts had said we would be plunging into a significant recession. But I think Western Australia has clearly shown that if you follow the health advice, you get the right health outcomes, but you also get the right economic outcomes. And I do want to say this, and I do this in most speeches, is I do want to thank all West Australians, everyone in this room, because we did rally together. We did take it seriously. And now we are achieving that soft landing. And our management of COVID has resulted in WA becoming the strongest economy in Australia. And through our management of the pandemic, we've also been able to keep the construction industry going, which I note was not the case with major shutdowns on the East Coast. But of course, we do face challenges that we didn't foresee. Our economy is booming and it brings its own pressures, particularly with a heated construction market and housing sector. And I think it's stating the obvious, but there are a range of factors that have been at play. If we remember prior to COVID, it actually was a renter's market. It was really a great time for tenants. But what we also perversely saw was a decline in private investors in the market, and that has affected apartment housing supply right now. We also have seen with the pandemic, for a first time, an increase or a net increase of interstate migration back into Western Australia. People also, and we know this, you only have to look at your streets, people weren't able to travel, and so they were investing in their homes. This boosted the renovation trade sector, but of course, that put more pressures on competing with building new homes. And of course, we've also affected the global impacts of war, shutdowns in China, and this has meant that we've had supply chain issues. And the lack of international migration has meant that I don't think we haven't seen that skilled labour that we need to date. So all these challenges, of course, they affect housing, they affect construction, and of course, what I hear from the sector is cost escalations. And I am acutely aware, as the Minister for Housing, that we do have a tight rental market. And I'm very cognizant of the pressures this puts on individuals. But I do want to put on the record that we still remain a more affordable place for both buying homes and in the rental market than Sydney or Melbourne. And WA rental affordability remains the lowest in the country, with the lowest proportion of income for repayments, with just under 20% of income required, compared to 26% in New South Wales and 30% in Tasmania. Now, we also know, despite these challenges, that there is affordable housing on its way. And yes, we did the 20,000 building bonus grant, which did see 27,000 building approvals in the last financial year. Now, I note there's been some now, you know, people like with hindsight, they all become experts again, they say we shouldn't have done that grant. But the reality is, and the Master Builders Association have put this on the public record, that it did save jobs, that it did save the sector, that it was weaker as COVID hit. My favourite research centre, the Bankwest Curtin Economic Centre, has flagged previously that 10,000 rentals will come back onto the market as people obviously enter new homes and those homes become available. Of course, I understand with the challenges that that may be slowing a bit, but we do still expect new rentals coming onto the market. So that's what's happening, and that's the challenges that we face. But given the amount of building approvals in the outer metro area, our government is diversifying its focus. We are not resting on our laurels. We're not saying, okay, 27,000 building approvals, yep, that's great. Instead, we are using this opportunity to drive reform to ensure that we continue a reliable supply of affordable and social housing, particularly when the boom recedes. Now, I'm being told that could be anywhere between 12 to 24 months, but we want to make sure that there is a pipeline of work, construction, and housing. So a key focus of our reform agenda is greater housing choice. And that means through driving stronger, affordable density infill and transit-orientated development. We know this, that despite COVID, denser cities and communities are still more sustainable, reducing typical travel distances and use of cars, improving access for residents to basic services and amenities, and encouraging energy efficient construction. Higher density developments also mean that people on low to moderate incomes can access established suburbs where we know that the prices are more expensive. And as a proportion of total dwellings in the Perth metropolitan area, the volumes of housing has been increasing, while the number of semi-detached dwellings and apartments have been falling. In short, it's obvious, we need to lift investment and increase delivery of apartment living in the long term, both within our city and across Metro Perth. And of course, one way to do that is to seize the opportunity associated with Metronet that will build 22 new train stations. There is enormous potential around those stations to do affordable density. Now, to sharpen our focus, you may be aware, I've talked about this before, but we've created a Residential Lands and Housing Delivery Ministerial Oversight Committee. Sorry for long names, it seems to be in government, that's what we do. But that brings together the portfolios of housing, lands and plannings so that we can really be focused on this agenda for greater affordable and social housing. So in terms of social housing, which is my bread and butter, we certainly are trying to change the way that we are doing things. You'd be aware, because I've talked about it a lot, that we've made a record investment, $875 million, the largest injection in social housing, $2.1 billion, and that's 3,300 new homes. Now, as part of that, and that vision of creating a pipeline of work, we have a social housing investment fund of nearly $500 million. And that is set aside to enable a future supply of social housing when that housing boom recedes. And we want to use this fund to leverage private and other non-for-profit investments. Sometimes I don't get it out. to grow the community housing sector and therefore add to the overall social housing numbers. In the short term, we are trying to do our best to any which way we can to adapt our current delivery. So we've diversified our options. We are obsessed in Western Australia with double brick, and that was my agency as well. But now we're moving significantly to timber frame and also have a strong modular program. And just to give you an example, we're knocking out timber frame homes from the date of the contract sign to handover in 22 weeks. So the other focus is to deliver that social housing and integrate it across every precinct, suburb, and community. But you should not underestimate how hard this is. Our government has had to make some tough decisions, and we've been criticised for it, for closing down massive social housing towers like Brownlee Towers. But we really do need to move away from suburbs of social housing enclaves and integrate social housing. But this can be more difficult and expensive. And I want to be very clear, and I've said it before, and I know some people don't like me saying this, but residents will always say this. They support social housing. They support homeless services as long as it's not within 1 kilometre of their own home. That is the stark truth that many, even in this room, do not want to hear. It presents a challenge to delivery social changing, to social houses. But by integrating social housing, that actually does provide us and opens doors to new ways of delivering social housing through schemes like ground leasing and build-to-rent strategy. And so, for example, in my own electorate today, we did announce a new pilot build-to-rent scheme for the Stirling Towers in Highgate, mixing social, affordable housing with market rentals. So we really do need to think outside the box about future social and affordable housing, and that type of mixed tenure build-to-rent development, I think, has a lot of opportunities and potential development. And I want to say on the side note, the government is looking at future policy settings in relation to build-to-rent. We've also got planning reform. And as you know, we have a high-energy planning minister, and we have been driving planning reform to deliver that density development. And in the first tranche of reforms, there was a great focus on streamlining, greater consistency, standardisation of approval processes. We created a central unit to approve major projects. And we've recently completed a consultation on a streamlined DAP system with 3 DAPs and full-time members. This is also about providing greater transparency and certainty in the system. And there's a second tranche of reforms which are underway, which we're developing following consultation. Now, we do face resistance to density, and this is down to a few reasons. If we want to deliver more affordable infill, more affordable social housing in those developments, we do have to tackle this issue. First of all, there are local governments that, rather than provide leadership to deliver quality medium and high density, sometimes prey to people's worst fears about development. And I actually saw it in the western suburbs where someone equated a density development to a COVID cruise ship and all the troubles that that would bring to local residents. We want to see density done well. We want to see livable buildings. That's why we've progressed Design WA, and that is the apartment code that is about setting higher quality developments and better consistent design benchmarks. So we've done that for high density. We are doing and are going to proceed with medium density, and that work is continuing. And ultimately, this is, I think, part of the other picture that we have to do and sell, is that apartment living that is close to train stations, close to services, close to transit-orientated development is attractive as an option. But I do think Western Australia is behind, that the consumer market still loves the 4x2, and that we have a story to tell about the benefits of transit-orientated development. Now, the last area, of course, as part of what we can leverage is actually using the state's vast land and assets. So our key focus as part of that committee has been about using, as we call it, lazy land and deconstraining this land to make it for social and affordable infill. So that's why earlier the Minister for Planning and I announced the Housing Diversity Pipeline. And this is designed to create innovative approaches for social and affordable housing delivery, which does include build to rent, does include ground lease models. And this is about facilitating medium to high density, particularly around Metronet stations. The pipeline has been open to the market. We went out for just registrations of interest. We announced 12 pieces of land, some very high value in transit orientated zones like East Perth, but also in the regions. We had an overwhelming response with 64 community housing providers and private developers expressing their interest in activating these sites for social and affordable housing. And we have set some expectation that one in five in these high density infill developments will be social or community housing. And I do think this is a great example of where lands and housing and planning, by also relaxing planning controls around those sites, is a way that we can create that future pipeline of work. So look, I will end it there. I do want to just leave this message that you do have, hopefully you can see my passion for social housing and affordable housing, but I think Rita and I are working very close together. We understand the synergies. We're not resting on our laurels. We're seizing this opportunity to drive more reform, but we're also open to new ideas. And I know there is a lot of expertise in this room, both industry. And so what I am looking for is that we are always open to looking at how we can change and reform the policy settings in government so we can facilitate social housing and affordable development. Thank you.